Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball. I
hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water, man. Y'all jacking. It's a party.
This is 11 Personnel, and we are back in the Bluegrass, the Commonwealth of Kentucky, back from Athens. And Adam Luckett, I don't know about you, but the road trips hit a little bit harder than they used to.
Moving a little slow this week. Feel like I'm day behind.
Yeah. Like, I raked the leaves on a Tuesday instead of a Sunday. Cleaned out the gutters, did the, you know, just the old man stuff.
The to-do list, honey to-do list.
Yes. Best part, too, is it was unprompted, so I got brownie points for that.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's best kind of points.
Tricks of the trade right there, folks. But so we're back, feeling better. My biggest takeaway from Athens is that I can still roll with the best of the best, just moving a lot slower the next day. Like, hitting the ground running at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. ain't quite the same.
Takes a while to get that engine revved up again.
Yeah. Pour all that 10W30 in it, you know, yeah. Just a little bit more. Needs a little bit more sauce to it. Just like Kentucky could use a little bit more sauce this week against the Missouri Tigers. I hope you all listened to our storytelling late night edition of the podcast.
11 Personnel After Dark.
Yes, that was, I enjoyed it. Our first guest on the show, too.
Had quite an entrance, our first guest did.
Yeah. And you know what? Nathan, us Roushes, we all know how to talk.
you Roushes ain't shy. I'll
No, we are not shy folk. So, you know, it made it easy. And it was good to have him on. But it's good to just be back at Vacation Experts, where we've been recording for the last month. Big shout out to the...
Nice little studio in here.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I mean, it's more of a studio than we have at the bar. Like, we just are in this giant open room here. It's all we're missing is like some foam siding on the walls. So big shout out to Robin Troop and the folks here at Vacation Experts in Louisville. They got an office over by the Bed Bath & Beyond over on Breckenridge Lane. It's really easy to get to off the interstate. Right. And that's why we meet here. It's because it's very easy
DuPont
for us to get
and Breckenridge.
To. Yes, very easy for us to get to. And they will hook you up on a trip. So if you want to go and party with the Cats sometime this year, they'll get you there. I know a lot of people actually went to him for Champions Classic. This is a football podcast, but doing the whole New York thing. Especially on like a Tuesday night. Like getting those travel arrangements, real weird.
Potential bowl trip maybe?
Oh. Shreveport? Nah, not
Charlotte.
Charlotte's probably. Thinking Charlotte?
Yeah, I'd be if they're there at even 6-6, 7-5, I'd be pretty surprised if it wasn't Charlotte.
Yeah, and they're kind of due for that one. Mm-hmm. All right, Georgia, what do you want to clean up from this? We talked about a lot of it, didn't get too heavy in the X's and O's, other than I think the easiest just takeaway is three or four plays here or there. They go Kentucky's way instead of Georgia's way. It's a different game.
Really just missed opportunities by Kentucky. You had the ball, multiple chances to score on Georgia's side of the 50, and just couldn't punch it in, especially early when you get some of that field position advantage. After that three and out Kentucky got with Georgia backed up, nice punt return by Josh Ali, you've got the ball right near Georgia's 40, and you go three and out. You just cannot have that. And then you get in the red zone a couple times, cannot score. You know, it was tough sledding against Georgia's defense, but we knew that going in.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky really couldn't traditionally run the ball with a running back. Lynn Bolden did some good things. I think he had 99 yards and 17 carries, which is pretty good considering against that defense.
Yeah, and it wasn't like an incredibly heavy workload either.
Right.
I think he had 24 in the Arkansas game. Mm-hmm. I'd like for him to keep it around 20.
Right.
Just anything more, then he's taking a lot of shots.
Right. Well, he does a good job about getting out of bounds and not throwing tacklers off and not really taking a lot of big hits.
Yeah.
He's thicker than you think.
Yeah.
Like, he for his size to be able to do some of the stuff where he gets hit, takes a pretty good shot,
mm-hmm.
but's able to, like, stunt the defender and then toss him off. Like, he's a lot stronger than a lot of people think he is.
Doesn't,
and I think he's thicker than people realize he is.
He quit doing the thing where he's getting held by one leg and he's trying to, like, wiggle free from that one leg.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, he took a lot of big shots previously in his career trying to do that when it's like, just go down, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think offensively, he played well. I think the offensive line kind of stepped up to the challenge where they're still having untimely penalties.
Okay, Stoops said that Stenberg's wasn't a penalty. Do you agree?
Like, I could see why you would call that holding, but you can't call that one and then miss the one on DeAndre Swift's touchdown run.
Yeah.
That I
got
pretty upset about the press box.
It was a no cheering in the press box.
Yeah, and then I went back and watched it on tape, and I did the same thing. You got it. You have to call that. So,
yeah.
If you're gonna call that one on Stenberg, you have to call the one. I'm not. I'm okay if they're gonna. If that's the game we're gonna play,
mm-hmm.
let's play it and let's. Then there should be 10 to 12 holding calls in the game.
Which, by the way, the officiating complaints prompted Greg Sankey to make a statement, and right. The statement was about 800 words, just saying "suck it."
He
said.
Well, he just pretty much put what they said at SEC Media Days, just in paper form.
Yeah, he's like, okay, we can't be perfect. We're gonna try to be as close to consistent as we can, and y'all just going to have to deal with
it. Don't be babies.
Yeah. And now, our boy Will Muschamp, he deserves it from like
gutless.
Like, I get it. Like, I understand some of his complaints. And you know what? It's for him to do that, like, that's a good look for the fans and for his players, because that was a hard-fought game that they could have easily won. Stoops going out of his way, he did a good job towing that line. But I do like that somebody tried to ask in some sort of like, hey, you think it'll be like over-officiated considering how last year's games ended? And he's like, I just want to call, just get a call from my guys. I don't care, just let me get a call.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stoops is on edge a little bit after that Florida fiasco too.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Florida. It's kind of their year where they're catching the breaks.
They caught the breaks last year, too.
You see on the road that they're catching the break, where the targeting on TJ Carter, the call there at South Carolina where they run that pick route.
And the block in the back on that one touchdown, where the dude's just running down the field holding the numbers on the back of his jersey.
So, it is what it is. It's almost like they're setting it up for the cocktail party to be a big game. If you want to get to conspiracy theories.
Is that in the unwritten rule book too, Mr. Lockett?
It might be. If Florida and Georgia are both good, let's have that game that's the only game that's guaranteed to be on CBS, 3:30. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Every year?
Every year that game's 3:30 CBS.
Huh. More you know.
So I don't know if that's in the contract or something, but certainly feels like some calls have gone the Gators' way that probably shouldn't have this season.
Interesting. Did you have anything else you wanted to get to from the Georgia game? Other than shout out to the defensive backs for playing well. I was a big fan of theirs.
Yeah, they missed a couple tackles on Swift that caused some big runs that I think they got tired late. But that's four games in a row where the RB1 is just on the other side has just destroyed Kentucky. Kylin Hill, 26 for 120, 3 touchdowns. This is not even counting Tavian Feaster. Rico Dowdle, 15 for 102, had a touchdown.
Yeah.
Rakeem Boyd, 15 for 134, 2 touchdowns. And then the best of the bunch, DeAndre Swift, 21 for 179 and 2 scores.
To be fair, that Boyd was like one play accounted for most of it. But
still, they count the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so RB1s are averaging 133.7 yards, 75 yards the last four games, nearly 7 yards per carry. They're getting torched by opposing running backs. And that's, that's the biggest thing holding this defense back right now. That and they haven't forced a takeaway in 13 quarters.
Which is surprising because I mean, this is 2 years in a row where the weakness and the strengths we've kind of had flipped going into the season. But I'd just assume that this team would be great at stopping the run. You know, the strength of the team's a strength between your defensive line, you know, Cash Daniel, DeAndre Square, Chris Oates. You thought that they'd be better at it. And I think some of that is the inexperience from the young guys that we underestimated who kind of only had to fill in spot roles last year. And I think a lot of it is Mike Edwards.
Yeah. Well, number one, if they had their druthers, they're playing a lot more base now. I don't know if you've noticed. I've noticed the last couple of games they're a lot more in base because
nickel play has been bad. Yeah.
So they've leaned a lot on that nickel spot for stops last year. They're not getting anything from that nickel spot. And then you look at Jack. What Josh Allen did last year was just incredible.
Yeah,
but incredible. Still, that's a position that – that you should be getting close to 8-9 sacks from that position, 15-16 tackles for loss. Like, that's what that position is tailor-made in this defense to get, you know, havoc plays, get negative plays. And I think Josh Wright and Joshua Pascal are doing some good things, but they need a little more from that spot. And Kentucky is last in the SEC in tackles for loss.
Ooh.
So that's the big thing. So every time one of these backs gets a touch, they're falling forward for 4, 5, 3 yards. And then you sprinkle in a 15-yard run here, a 22-yard run there. Then all of a sudden that yards per carry mark is up around 6 instead of if you've gotten a few tackles for loss sprinkled in there, it's down by 4. So I think that's really hurting them. They're not getting those negative plays. Offensive lines are able to lean on them a little bit, and they're falling forward, and they're getting ahead of the chains, and then that's hurting their third down defense because instead of 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, they're in 3rd and 3.
Well, and I think that's where we saw Kentucky improve the most, and just against Georgia was in those they completed some tackles for loss, and it was that's why I was kind of joking, like, the strength is finally the strength.
Well,
but they like Boogie Watson had that awesome play.
Mm-hmm.
You had a couple. Chris Oates had that big play in the backfield as well. Mm-hmm. They were much better at the line of scrimmage, but they wore down.
Right. Georgia is number one in the SEC in tackles for loss allowed. They just don't give them up. This week, it should be a little easier sledding.
Yeah.
And going up against another really good back. We've seen, I just named those four. And then now they have Larry Roundtree, and still on the schedule is Keyshawn Vaughn.
Mm-hmm.
Javion Hawkins is on pace for like a 1,400-yard season at Louisville.
It's amazing what happens to an offense when a coach uses a running back to run.
Right.
It's really, really bizarre.
So, and Scott Satterfield, he really schemes up the run game very well. So, like, this ain't going away. Like, there's some more running backs coming down the chimney that they're going to have to be ready for.
The thing was is we thought, like, oh, they've got it taken care of. Well, Michael Piron got stuffed up. Florida couldn't run the ball. Well, it turns out Florida can't run the ball against anybody.
Right.
But this week – we're going to see a lot of running again because guess what's coming? The hurricane. No, it's not an actual hurricane, but Chris Bailey's latest European weather model predicts 6 inches of rain over the weekend in Lexington. Rain all day, every day. And I do want to talk about just the impacts and the differences between Florida or between what was in Athens and what it was here. And I think that's important to note that Athens is natural grass. So that's some positives and negatives. The negatives are that when it rains all day like it did, the field just gets chewed up a lot easier. And when you lose your footing, it's because you're taking a big chunk out of the grass.
Right.
Kroger Field is an artificial surface. It's going to drain much better, so you won't get pools of it, and you're not going to be taking chunks out of it. But that stuff is slick.
Yeah.
Just on the top. I don't know what it is about it, but it's that fake kind of plasticky stuff. You slip, you slide a little bit easier. Now, if it's not like if Benny Snell were to lean on somebody and try to drive, his foot at Georgia would push the surface backwards and create a big divot, and he wouldn't be able to go anywhere. That won't be the case at Kroger Field, but if you're trying to get loose, a la Lynn Bowden, a la A.J. Rose on the outside, you're more liable to try to plant your foot and just you slip, and you're done.
Right. So, I mean, for Kentucky, it's going to play into their advantage. But another big thing, too, is Georgia down there was wind.
Yes, the wind was really bad.
15 to 17 mile-per-hour winds pretty much the entire game. Here they're calling for 4 to 5, which is really shouldn't affect mm-hmm. your passing game.
I saw some where it was like the gusts could get up to 15, but like that's just
for the most part, it's going to stay in between that 5 to 7 range.
Right, right, which is important.
So that in itself is going to help the passing game. The biggest thing in the Georgia game last week was just I think the wind was a big factor, and it was natural grass that had been rained on all day, and as soon as the teams warmed up and after the first series, the field was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
There were divots all over the field. Middle end zone was super muddy from where the teams warmed up in the beginning of the game. But that's not going to happen at where at Kroger Field.
Right.
So, like, I don't think Missouri is going to, hey, we don't need to throw it, or we don't need to throw it more than 25 times. Missouri's still going to do what they do. It's kind of a pass-heavy offense, but they've watched the tape. And they've seen what Kentucky has done against opposing run game. So I fully expect Larry Roundtree to get 20-plus carries in this game.
So Missouri offensively, as far as play calls, they're very balanced. They're about 50-50 mm-hmm. when it comes to rushing attempts versus passing attempts. But as far as production, it's about 65, almost 65% of their offensive production comes in the pass game because Kelly Bryant's really good. And they couldn't run the ball at all last week against Vanderbilt. What was the Roundtree? He had like 26 yards.
Yeah, it was like 12 carries for 28 yards, something like that.
Just something really bad, which we watched some of it in the hotel room. I didn't go back and watch it. I mean, was it just the same kind of thing with Georgia where they just threw in a clunker?
A little bit. I mean, there were penalties. Mizzou leads the SEC in penalty yards.
Hmm.
They had, I believe, 12, 13 penalties for over 100 yards. Vanderbilt watched a lot of Missouri tape, and they did what I talked about doing. They struggled to stop the QB run game on defense. Their defense is elite in about every other area. Their number one pass defense in the SEC. Their traditional run defense is awesome. They've got a ton of experience, even without Kyle Garrett, their star middle linebacker, who was on pace to be the SEC Defensive Player of the Year before
he was a baller.
Tore his pectoral muscle, and he's probably out for the season. But we've seen it a couple times where they really, really struggle to stop the QB run game. That was the biggest reason Wyoming beat them in week one.
They just RPO'd them to death. And they had a pretty big guy, too. It wasn't like athleticism is getting them. They just were getting RPO'd to death by a big guy.
And Wyoming game was kind of a little bit fluky because Wyoming had a defensive touchdown, and then they had two long runs for touchdowns, and that's something Missouri really hasn't given up all season. Ole Miss played them, and they were right in the game with true freshman John Rice Plumlee.
Kelly Bryant also threw the worst interception in the history of interceptions mm-hmm.
in the Wyoming game.
It was across his body to the other corner of the end zone. Like, what are you doing, dude?
Right, and then John Rice Plumlee went up there and had Ole Miss rolling. Then he got hurt, and that's kind of when the Tigers pulled away. And then they went to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt kept it quiet, went to their third-string quarterback, Mo Hussain, who's more of a runner.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had a little bit of success early, and they made – Missouri playing a slog. Missouri leads the SEC in plays per game on offense. They run 75 snaps a game.
Ooh.
Derek Dooley is still is the offensive coordinator. They've put in some more like pro concepts and more like traditional type like running game.
That's why.
But they still want to go. That's why he went there because he wanted that for his NFL stock.
One of the pro mm-hmm. have that on his resume.
But they still want to go fast. They're like an ISO spread offense. They want to split the field wide. They have speed at receivers. None of their receivers are taller than 6'1", 6'2". They're all around 180, 190 pounds, but they're all quick and fast. And so they want to spread you out, and they want to use the field vertically and try to create isolation situations and then slice you up with the pass game. They don't want to run Bryant a lot. They've had to here lately, but they talked about this week that Kelly needs to stay in the pocket more. He doesn't need to take off scrambling. They want him to be a pocket quarterback, and then they want to spread you out and then try to run the ball inside the tackles.
That year that he took Clemson to the college football playoff, that was his bread and butter. I think he had 11 touchdowns and like almost 900 yards rushing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think just in the four games he had last year at Clemson, his rushing stats are comparable. They've really tried to – I mean, and some of it has to do with he took that nasty hit at Troy. And so, that you know, some of it's self-preservation on their part. But I think the part that worries me more than anything in this game is the – I forgot what the term that Stoops used for it, but it's less of Kentucky just not being sound in the run game and more of – they're going fast and just it can't get lined up quick enough where they'll get a quick first down.
Right.
And then before you even lined up, they're inside zone, and then Roundtree busted a 10-yard run.
It's important to remember with Bryant, first of all, that that year at Clemson you're talking about, he only averaged 3.46 yards per carry. This year at Mizzou, this is the sacks included. Unfortunately, I don't have the non-sack numbers. He's putting
That's stupid. Can we just say that?
Yeah, I wish they would change
Suck at college football.
Sacks should count against your passing yardage like it does in the NFL and not your rushing yardage, but that's for another day. And then 2.86 yards per carry this year. So, like, he's not like this, you know, something's wide open, zoom, 50 yards. If something wide open, he could probably get 15 to 18.
Yeah, he can get away from pressure, right. too.
Like, he's a good athlete, and he can run a little bit, but it's not anything crazy. Like, he doesn't have Terry Wilson speed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which
he's more of a thick runner. Like, when they do have run designs, it's more going to be, like, quarterback power, stuff like that.
Near the red zone.
Right. QB run game from them, it's not something, you know, people see dual threat quarterback and get scared.
Right.
But this is not something that they're going to try to beat Kentucky with. It's something they're going to use a couple times a game as a wrinkle. Nothing they were going to lean on heavily.
What it does make me worry, though, is that you talked about Josh Pascoe and Jordan Wright doing some good things, but not being great. Well, might not have either of them on Saturday.
Right.
Stoops said they're both banged up. We're going to get doses of Jared Casey and J.J. Weavier because Xavier Peters – is being a snothead, for the lack of a better term, didn't travel with the team down to Athens because he wasn't showing up to meetings on time. So a little bit of uncertainty at the outside linebacker position, and now you're going to get some true freshmen to come in and go try to tee off on a guy who was playing in the college football playoff 2 years ago. It's not an easy task. Now, I'm sure they will keep it simple for them when they are in the game because you have to. And I think Casey's a good enough athlete. What I worry about is that good pass rush against a guy who can move around in the pocket is staying in your lanes and letting all four make the sack and not just one dude. And I worry that they're going to try to be a hero and that'll just open things up for him. And then what you're doing is hurting T.J. Carter and Calvin Taylor Jr. in their pass rush.
Here's my take on it. I believe Stoops said in his coach's show that Pascoe should be able to play. So he might be playing hurt, but he's still going to play. I think because of what Missouri does on offense, Kentucky is going to be forced to play more sub packages than they have the last few weeks.
Sub package.
So that's going to mean, you know, nickel a lot of times. So they're going to need that nickel to play this week. But when they go to that nickel, usually one of your linebackers drops out. Typically, it's your Sam backer.
Typically, Boogie Watson.
So, but this week, I think Boogie's going to be playing some Jack. I think he's going to play pretty much every snap, whether it's at Sam or Jack. And then, you know, they go to that magic package.
Oh, yeah. My favorite.
Now, I don't know what they're going to do to replace Pascoe. I guess it'll be just, you know, whoever. But that's what I would look for. And then if one of them is doing really well in pass rush between Weaver and Casey. That's this type of situation where I can see them playing.
Right.
When they're in magic, when they're on obvious passing downs, to just have them go and do whatever they do, whether it's speed rush or whatever.
Both of them are – I guess especially Casey on the speed rush. Weaver's a lot longer.
Right. Now, both of them coming into college, that was one of the big questions I had on them was what they were raw as pass rushers. So I don't know if they're really ready to contribute that. But I think – you know, it's getting to that point in the year where Stoops wants to start sprinkling in some of these freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd expect to see them on kickoff, stuff like that, punt cover team.
Right, right.
Because there's a void there now that Stanley Garner's gone.
Yes, which Stanley Garner announced he was transferring today. It's no surprise. I think if you paid any attention to what he was doing on the depth chart, you notice that he was getting played over by a true freshman before that true freshman broke his wrist, and then he still wasn't playing.
And a corner in his same class.
Yeah, Jamari Brown
starting
become a stud.
Pseudo starting. He's coming off the bench, but he's playing more than Cedric Dort, who's starting in front of him.
He's one of their three that are in the rotation. And Garner came in ranked as a 4-star by Rivals. But, like, you know, take that for what you will. He'll probably end up at a place like an FAU or something
or
like that.
Or JUCO.
Yeah, and the reason why he was ranked so high is because he was a 6'4 safety. And they were like, ooh, he can play cornerback. But he never figured it out. Right. And, you know, it is what it is. Attrition happens. I don't think this is – you've had two in a week, but the only thing from a – optics only hurts you in one of them. The other ones, they're just going
to
happen.
Well, you had to look at it this way, too. Garner, now that he's 2 years in the program and he's being passed by guys that are pretty much his grade, you know, the deck was stacked against him in the secondary. So for the program, it doesn't, you don't really lose much because you had guys that are playing over him already and some are younger than him.
Right, right.
So it just gives you an extra scholarship. Sean Kell Knight Goff, you look at his position, you've got DeAndre Square, who's a sophomore, and then you have Trey Wilkins, same class, same position, and Wilkins has played special teams to this point.
Yeah. Jamin Davis also.
And Jamin Davis is a sophomore in the same spot. So depth-wise, you're still okay there. So when you look at it that way, sometimes you need some attrition because
it opens up spots in the next class. The one that was supposedly strapped for numbers, I think you can, they're getting close to where they can just have a full class.
Right, yeah. Right. Oh, and give them options for the transfer portal to fill some spots that they might need filled for next year, whether it's, you know, on the defensive line, maybe needing a guy to plug and play, or just anywhere else.
It's pretty funny, too, on the football podcast Monday, we went through Charles Walker's recruiting class, which was that 2014 top 25 class.
Mm-hmm.
Like half of them, maybe half finished.
Right.
UK, maybe. Now, they took a lot more risk back then because it was 2014, but that's how it goes. People transfer all the time.
Right.
It's college football.
Right.
Kentucky will be just fine. I think the bigger question, though, is can you get this defense to play four quarters of football, whereas last week you got two and a half before wearing and tearing down in the slop?
This game is all about setting the pace. Barry Odom had an ugly stat this week. He's like 2-16 as a head coach when his team doesn't score 30 points.
Yeah, 2-15.
2-15. Yeah. So, and we know what Kentucky wants to do. Their last 21 games, only one time has somebody scored over 30 points. So it's going to be all about what kind of game do we play. And with the rain, I think that's going to help Kentucky a bit because usually teams don't play as fast.
Right.
When it's pouring down rain.
And even if it's not if Kelly Bryant, every time he grips it and rip it, he feels good, there's a mental thing there. Right. There's going to be a couple inexplicable drops. Right.
So it's all about the start. We saw it last time Kentucky had a big home game. They started slow as molasses. Georgia, that's the fastest they've started all season. So if they can make that a trend, get out to another fast start, kind of set the tempo, set the pace of the game, which is what Vanderbilt did to Missouri last week, then you force them to play your game in your house and a trend that goes your way, because when you play this way, you've won games, and when they have to play this way, they don't win games. So I think that's important to set them up early to get Missouri playing Kentucky's brand of football. If Kentucky does that, they're going to be in really, really good shape. One of the main reasons they're going to be in really, really good shape is because Missouri has been really bad against stopping the QB run game, like we talked earlier.
We mentioned that briefly, but I don't think it gets talked about enough. And here's the thing that I like, too, is that your boy Adam Luckett does not get, like, there's some things where, like, I can tell that you're kind of liking, I feel like you really like the spot Kentucky's in this week.
I do. I liked it a lot more before Missouri.
Or Vandy beat him.
Dropped a brick last week.
Can the teams, like, obviously Bye can't lose, but Tennessee is going to, they're going to get crushed the week before. Like, that's inevitable, right? At this point?
Well, they play UAB at home.
Exactly. I could see
go Blazers.
Go Georgia's. They're going to Georgia State it, and they're going to mess it up. But it feels like that the balls have bounced against them the week before. And so then they kind of go there, like, Georgia, how do you have zero turnovers in the rain? Well, it's because you had four the week before.
Well.
You got all turnovered out. Like,
first play of the game, kickoff. Georgia can't pick up a damn football.
Yeah.
Kentucky just couldn't get down there.
Oh, my God. That just – so you hope that
and then,
Missouri
then does – the one time Kentucky lays the ball on the turf, Georgia's all over it, and Kentucky can't recover it.
Yes. Yeah. So you hope that – maybe, okay, so on the flip side, Adam Luckett, maybe it's Kentucky's turn to get some balls bouncing their way. It's been two or three games since they've had a forced turnover?
13 quarters since the Mississippi State game.
Ugh. Gross.
Yeah, it's time.
It was that Quandre Mosley pick, right?
It was the last one they got was the Eccles sack fumble.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. Mosley's right before half. Yeah. Right. But still, so it's been a long time. Kentucky's due, and to our overarching point is the quarterback run game, even though there was a lot of people who kind of circled on their calendar, this is probably where we're getting Sawyer Smith back.
The Bruce Pearl face from the NCAA tournament, we're shaking. That's the face I make when anybody says Sawyer Smith this week. This ain't the week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you why. This Missouri defense has been elite when they face a non-QB run. They play four games. They've won all of them. They're giving up 2.94 yards per play, 1.24 yards per rush, 4.44 yards per pass. That is about as good as you can get. That's tops in the country. Those four games are why, when you look at the metrics, when you look at all the stats, why Missouri's defense is ranked
top five.
Up there with the elites.
Yeah.
It's because of what they've done against traditional offenses. But now we've had some games where they faced a quarterback that can move a little bit, and QB run is heavily involved. QB design runs are heavily involved. In those three games, Mizzou is 1-2. They've given up at least 20-plus points in each game. Vanderbilt only got 21. Ole Miss got 27. Wyoming was up there in, like, the high 30s.
37.
So do whatever the math is. In those three games, they're giving up 5.81 yards per play.
So that's three more yards? That's double?
Yeah, it's double, and then, you know, that's down there towards the bottom. Like, if you were just going to look at the rest of the SEC in yards per play allowed, it would be ranked 12th or 11th in that's in between there. So, and then they're giving up 5 yards per carry, 5.04.
So that's more than double, more than twice their typical yards.
And then when these teams are able to run the ball, that means Missouri is having to sacrifice to, in order to stop the run, that's opening up the pass. They're giving up 7.25 yards per pass allowed. And when you look at what Wyoming's quarterback done this year, he's putting up like 5 yards an attempt throwing. So it's not like he's a good thrower.
Yeah.
He's pretty much Lim Bowden throwing-wise. So you look at that, and that the stuff's going to open up. I look at it as twice Bowden's had Wagner. Once he was just a skosh out of bounds against Arkansas. And then last time it was just a drop.
Skosh, I haven't heard that word in a while.
It's a good one, ain't it?
Yeah, it's a really good one.
I've been sitting on that one. But so I think.
And then he had the one, I mean, the Georgia one that he caught until he hit the ground.
I just think Kentucky's due in some spots in this game. I think a big play to Wagner is due. They're getting close.
A big touchdown is due. Zach Johnson returns it. I mean, just run the kicker over.
I think Kentucky getting some bounces on some turnovers, getting some turnover luck. They're due there. And I think Lim Bowden is going to have a big game on the ground, because there were some times in that Georgia game where you look and you saw, oh, he might break this one here, and then Georgia just zoom. They got so much defensive speed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they eliminated a lot of that. Mizzou doesn't have that, and Mizzou's starting strong safety, Tyree Gillespie, I believe he's third on the team in tackles, an important cog in their run defense. He had a nasty hit on – he knocked Mo Hassan, Vandy's quarterback, out of the game last week with a concussion. He's suspended for the first half.
Ooh,
so they're starting a true freshman there in that spot, and that's going to be a spot that they're going to be asking to come in the box and help out. So I expect Kentucky to run that guy's way early.
My dog just caught a chipmunk in the backyard. Kind of wish I was home for this.
Oh, yeah?
It's been critter time at the Roush House. Yeah. We had a raccoon bust in the attic, which, by the way, the people who, like – pay, like, are companies that remove critters from your house. Total racket. Absolute racket. I just put a metal screen up. I don't need all this junk. Try charging $700.
Whoa.
Yeah. I'm not paying that. I'm going to go hire a good old boy to just go put up a metal screen, make sure that bastard ain't coming back. And then come to find out the dog, who, he's actually a little scaredy cat. He, when I had him with my other friend's dog, who's a big country dog, he'll eat pot. He'll kill anything. Jag would be the, I'm going to trap him for you. You go get it. Chipmunks, though, I guess he's good enough to go get some little chipmunks. Is Merle hunting? Does he get critters? Rabbits?
He chases after them.
Mm-hmm, but
he's got some bloodhound in him, so he's got little.
Has he ever gotten one, though?
I don't. He's eaten a bee. At least I think he ate a bee.
That's a bee.
No, there was a mouse that was dead under, like, something behind our house, and
Oh.
He tried to act like he got that one, but I think it was dead before. But he's chased after squirrels, but he's never caught one.
We've had a rabbit living underneath our wood pile that whenever I'm like doing work, I'll see it dart out. And the dog's way too dumb to figure it out. So I'm really proud of him because he's been very close to catching squirrels for the longest time. Finally got him a chipmunk. Well done.
Good for old Jack.
Yeah.
Round of applause.
Good boy. That's a very good boy. Now my wife's dealing with it. God, she's going to be so mad. Back to football. I kind of like the silliness that we're at with the quarterback situation too. Because with the Sawyer Smith kind of experiment in general, I don't know how long he's been hurt, but even when he was great, I mean, he had, what was he, first 9 or 10 or 11 passes he completed. But even after that, it was four turnovers.
Well,
Lynn Bowden hasn't turned the ball. He's had that one fumble.
I think we're going to find out at the end of the year that maybe his injury was kind of serious and hard to play through.
And that's why I would much rather just be like we've reached, as reporters, we don't even really ask about Sawyer anymore. I kind of joked with Henshaw just to get him to say something. But, we've reached apathy at that point. And I kind of like the weirdness of this season now, too. You're going to get a point where we've got Lynn Bowden running around at quarterback. We're playing in the rain about every week against teams that just came off big losses. It's a weird season.
It has been a weird season. And the QB injuries.
And you know what, though? We deserve some of this. Karma works in mysterious ways, folks. I don't know if you're religious. I don't know if you're spiritual. Whatever you are, karma's real. And do you remember what the hell happened in this game last year? This is the wildest ending to a football game ever. Mm-hmm. People talk about their favorite moments as Kentucky fans. It's hard for me to say that the Missouri game was better than beating Georgia or beating Florida and snapping the streak. But you want to talk about shock and awe? Being on that field for that final drive.
It's no victory from the jaws of defeat.
Oh, my goodness. But you, some of that was Kentucky didn't give up a first down and a half. Like, that's incredible. I didn't go through and find the numbers. It was pressure time, but I'm sure. I think it was like 8 or 9 three and outs.
You're right. That in Kentucky, they marched the ball up and down the field. They just couldn't finish drives.
Yeah,
so, that game was like, if you play that game 100 times with those stats, Kentucky wins that game probably 90-something times. It's just they couldn't finish drives.
Which, by the way, those are legit criticisms of Eddie Grant. The whole if you want to know why I stand for Grant so hard, it's because of stuff like that. Like, they're not good at short yardage without Benny Snell.
Yeah.
And they haven't been great in the red zone at times. When they are good, the offense is humming. But, like, that's a legit criticism you could have for him. Now, to have the balls to call a fade to Ahmad Wagner, who hadn't played at all. And then he gets a pass interference. I mean, it's on the 10-yard line. He gets a pass interference with no time on the clock. And then, even though in that Texas A&M game, which was this was the second game after the bye week, so 3 weeks prior.
It was the game before the bye.
Missouri was?
No, you're talking about, I thought you were talking about Texas A&M.
Yeah, yeah. So okay. Missouri was 3 weeks after the Texas A&M game.
You're right.
How much hell did people give him for not giving Benny Snell the ball in overtime?
A lot.
And he still threw it on an untimed down on a timing route to C.J. Conrad. And it worked. And you know what? People talk about the genius of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why offensive play calling, it's very fickle, and I appreciate that Grant has stuck to his guns. And this year, it worked with Arkansas. They didn't try throwing a hurt Sawyer in. And it Lynn worked to a T. And I have a feeling, here's the thing, too, I figured out, too, I can't, like when I start asking questions that are a little bit too on the nose about, they've been good. The Q run's been really good against them. How has it worked so well against Missouri's defense? The coaches, they climb up.
Yeah.
They don't want to give away anything. So,
I would, too, probably.
And is that me being a little egotistical? Sure. But I do think that the coaches are confident in what they can do against this Missouri defense with Lynn Bowden. And I think they know that last game they were just incredibly limited. And some of it was it was what Georgia was doing in the run game.
Yeah, I think that Georgia defense is pretty damn good.
That's what I mean. They're going to stop. Getting out to the edge against Georgia's defense, it doesn't do you that much good either because they're so fast.
You can't get there. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because those safeties are so damn good.
They got there with Josh Ali on, like, the first possession.
Yeah.
And it got him a first down.
That was about it. So, yeah, I think the QB run game is big. But one thing to keep in mind is Missouri has 5 defensive touchdowns on the season. 5 of those came in their first 5 games. Kel Garrett was responsible for 2 of them. They scored 2 defensive touchdowns against South Carolina. So ball security, especially in the rain, is going to be big because this is a defense that when you look at some of their offensive numbers, you're like, wow, they're putting up 34, 35 points per game, blah, blah, blah. But then you look at it, their defense has set them that offense up well all year. You see the 5 defensive scores. They have a punt return touchdown on the season. Last week, an interception set up a score for Missouri against mm-hmm. Vanderbilt inside the red zone. So this defense just thrives on game-swinging plays. They've been awesome all season for the most part, except when facing that QB run game. They're strong in the red zone on defense, so that's something that Kentucky's going to have to be aware of. But they don't get a lot of sacks and tackles for loss. So when you do that, they're just winning on a down-to-down basis. They're just kicking ass on a down-to-down basis. They're not giving up a lot of big plays.
Some of the one of those defensive touchdowns was Kel Garrett pick 6 with a torn pack.
Yes. Another one was...
I think they had 2 in that game, didn't they?
Another one was Ryan Holinsky. No, they just had 1 in the Troy game. They had 2 in the South Carolina game. Ryan Holinsky throwing the ball. It gets batted down. It gets batted down, and while it's in the air coming back to Lawrence Holinsky, instead of just hitting it and letting it fall or just letting it fall in front of him, he kind of grabs it and throws it to the ground real flimsily.
I don't think either Wackett or I could accurately describe how ridiculous this play by Ryan Holinsky was. But, yeah, he just, like, he got a pass batted back to him, and sometimes you'll see quarterbacks catching it. He tried to knock it down, and in doing so, he caught it and then just fumbled it, and they picked it up and scored. It's completely ridiculous. Go look it up. But what I wanted to do is ask you about this, because that South Carolina game reminded me, South Carolina stunk it up. I mean, granted, that was Holinsky's 2nd start.
Yes.
So
the Alabama game.
Yeah, so that was part of it. But Missouri's defensive game plan that South Carolina implemented the following week against Kentucky was just make us – you got to beat us outside. And they dared Eddie Green to throw a lot of screens in that South Carolina game, and he did, and they couldn't do much. They dared him to do the little hitches, and it didn't do him any good. Missouri did the same thing to South Carolina. Is that what Missouri is going to try to do again this week against Kentucky?
Yes, but they haven't stopped the QB run all season. So that's the big variable they're having trouble figuring out how to defend.
And if you can get Lynn wide, then Katie bar the door.
Yes. Well, Kentucky, the biggest thing I'm looking for at Kentucky in this game is what can their running backs give them? In wins, they're producing. In losses, they aren't. And now you look, Kavassie Smoke has an injury. He's really hit the wall mm-hmm. since that Florida game.
Yeah.
I believe he's got like 80-something yards on 25 carries. I think it's 82 yards on 25 carries, and like 30 of them came on that one against Arkansas in the fourth quarter.
As soon as they started using him for promotional materials in that Mississippi State game, yeah, mm-hmm. it didn't really work out.
So he's hit the wall. He's had injury issues, the migraine. Now he's got a shoulder sprain he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if he's even in the game plan this week. It might be wise just to sit him out, let him get the bye, and then have him come back for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I kind of liked what Rodriguez did.
And then you're looking at Rose and Rodriguez, who are 2 kind of clashing styles. So can those guys, against a strong traditional run front, can they give you 25 carries? Can they get close to around 100 yards? Can they give you 4 yards per pop or more? If they can do that, that's really going to open up things for Kentucky. Like I've said before, Bolden's going to have a big day on the ground. But what can Eddie Grant scheme up? I think this is the game where you got to be like, hey, we got to throw it a little bit. Maybe let Bolden throw it on a screen or a slant or something just intermediate, some easy throw to just make the defense respect it. And then can you hit 1 or 2 to Wagner? If you do all those things, I think you have a chance to have a really big day on offense.
And it could be a fun day. Fun in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that Mississippi State game last year. Or maybe that Missouri game, which, please, be nice, Kentucky fans. Don't show any Missouri fans Ahmad Wagner catching the ball outside of the back of the end zone, pass interference being called. Mm-hmm. Don't. They've had a rough time. If you show it to them, they will get upset. Just don't, please. Just be good, hospitable fans. It would just, it would be a real shame if Missouri fans had to relive that anguish. That's all I'm saying. And it'd be a real shame if they had to do it again.
Poor Mizzou fans. Another thing to keep in mind, Mizzou's defense ranks first in the country in three and out rate. Over 50% of their opponents' possessions are three and out.
Oh, well, that's not good.
So, Kentucky, that's going to be big. Just get started. Just get a first down. Just move the ball. Do not, especially with that offense, the tempo they run a run at, that's the last thing you need on offense in three and out.
So,
Kentucky had a bad one against Arkansas. Remember, they were backed up, three and out, and then that created an Arkansas touchdown drive. Their only sustained drive all night. And they had a couple against Georgia three and outs where they could not have one, where they were kind of in scoring territory. They get a couple first downs, they're in field goal range. Instead, they go three and out. So, that's going to be important to remember. Kentucky not going three and out, moving the chains a little bit, and just helping their defense out and controlling that time of possession and making Missouri play a game where each team's only going to get about 60 to 65 snaps on offense.
Yeah. Slow down, run the damn ball.
Run the damn ball.
Run.
Which is what pretty much what Darren Henshaw said.
Ball. I love it. Just ground and pound, baby. Ground and pound. Mm-hmm. You know what's funny? Like, I was going through Twitter today, and I saw something here. It's a letter. It says, "Dear parents, I'm reaching out to you to let you know that the recent claims that I am, quote-unquote, pursuing an exit strategy are total crap. It's an annual strategy driven by our enemies to cause disruption to our program and to negatively recruit. By the way, I don't even have an, quote-unquote, agent or representative. I am committed to your sons, their education, and to their development as football players and people. Please excuse the informality of this letter, but I felt that it was important to get this out to you as quickly as possible. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions. Happy to discuss. Go Blue, Jim Harbaugh."
First of all, I don't believe him, but if any coach didn't have an agent, Harbaugh would be high on that list. He does his own negotiations.
Oh, man.
Listen, there's two – Football Scoop had two reports this week. And those of you all don't know, Football Scoop's a website. They basically
they get all their scoop from agents.
Yeah.
Who?
Yes, that's what I was getting at. The guy who runs it, his brother is an agent, and his dad was an agent. I'm pretty sure. So that's
Zach Barnett.
No, it's a Pete Rossell. Or Scott Rossell is the guy who runs it, and then I think his brother Pete is a sports agent.
Got you. But they are always on the cutting edge of.
Mm-hmm. Now here lately, the market's kind of been open a little bit, and you've seen more people get into kind of the news breaking, but 4 years ago, that was the site. They were breaking everything.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's where they make their hay. That's where they make their money. So basically, they had two reports this week. First one, I believe, was Harbaugh saying he's looking for an exit strategy. Things aren't working. They're not going to win the Big Ten again. Some people aren't happy, but he's not doing poor enough where Michigan can fire him. He's kind of the native son.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just kind of like,
huge buyout.
This ain't working. Let me get out of here while, you know, the stock or the cupboard stocked a little bit. It could be easy for a coach to come in here, succeed in year one, and then let me get back in the NFL somewhere. So that's why that was Harbaugh's response.
Right.
Obviously, Mark Stoops, a lot of people think, could be a candidate there. I'd be surprised if it got past Matt Campbell. I think that's kind of job that fits him, yeah, and that Iowa State team's having a really good season.
That area, too.
Yeah, right there in the Midwest. So let's go down to Florida State.
This is a tweet from Mike Farrell. So despite the denial, I think there's interest on Florida State part on why wouldn't there be? And now that Urban Meyer has come out and said he would be interested in the Cowboys job, all bets are off as far as his return to coaching. Some random person just said Mark Stoops is their next coach, talking about the Seminoles, and Mike Farrell agrees with this. Mike Farrell, if you don't know, he is the head honcho at Rivals.
Mm-hmm. Head recruiting guy.
Yeah, and I don't particularly enjoy anything he does. Like,
don't put too much stock into what he's putting on Twitter when it comes to coaching.
He is more of a pundit than, the content that he puts out, I kind of laugh at. Like, especially during camping season, Farrell's five.
And then we have to talk about the AD's response to that. Pretty much saying Urban Meyer would never be a candidate for Florida State, saying, "We ain't hiring no damn Gator," my words, not his.
Yeah.
Saying Spurrier ain't gonna be a candidate either. So what he's saying is we're not touching any of that Florida stink.
Mac Brown said that he thinks that Steve Spurrier could end up coaching somewhere again. The only problem with that is that I think Spurrier would the reason why he did the alliance thing is he could just coach ball.
He just draw plays.
Yeah, and he didn't have to deal with all of the recruiting. Because, that's the...
Spurrier's also 74 years old. He'd be 75 to start of next season.
Yeah, no.
Mac Brown is Nick Saban's age. People think Brown is older than he – I mean, he's old, but he's not as old as I think people think he is.
And the thing that, like, I think people don't get in most jobs, too, is, like, there's stuff like today. I was dealing with a bunch of credentials and expense report, just like stuff about my job. Like my job isn't just talking into a microphone and pounding on a keyboard. There's a lot of other annoying things. And Spurrier, I think, would love to live in a world where he could just still coach ball and not have to deal with anything else. And that's what he got in the Alliance. That's mm-hmm. what he would get if he went and did the XFL or some right. other venture. But and that's why I think, to back to Jim Harbaugh, I think – even though I kind of wanted to see him do it once, because we had this conversation just on the road trip. I like seeing the native sons just do it once to like reach that dream, to achieve that goal. I think we're getting close to it with Coach O, and it makes me really happy. And I wanted to see it once with Harbaugh, but he does kind of annoy me, and I think he's a better NFL coach. I think the NFL, that environment just suits him better, and that's where I ultimately think he'll end up in this offseason.
Right. Yeah, well, I could definitely see that happening. And, like, if Michigan opens, like, obviously Stoops' name is going to be there. But, like I just mentioned, with Matt Campbell sitting there, I'd be very surprised if he wasn't the next head coach of Michigan. And then go down to Florida State. I just have a hard time seeing them bringing in a guy that's going to run the kind of offense Stoops wants to run. They're kind of a fan base where they just want to score points. That's just kind of the Florida thing down there. You have to score points. They don't want to win with kind of ugly defense.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at that, I see them looking towards a guy that maybe runs a more wide open offense than what Stoops is going to run.
Which,
and I don't know if they're totally cool with like, all right, yeah, let's bring back the Jimbo tree because that worked out so well. So I don't know if that's really what they're looking for.
Well, and from Stoops' perspective too, I think Stoops, the appealing part of that job is also the worst part of that job, and that's you get out, you can recruit whoever, wherever. Mm-hmm. And you've got everything you need to succeed there. But look what it's done to the last two coaches. They've chewed up and spit out.
Guys. Right. But I also think at the same time, if both those schools want him, I think it's going to be hard for him to say no, because that's your chance to go win a national championship somewhere.
That's true.
If it doesn't work out, you know, it doesn't work out, he can go be a high-level defensive coordinator somewhere for the last 6-7 years of his career and make good money. So if that happens, I think it'd be hard for him to say no. But I just don't – I think he's a little bit down the list.
Right.
I think the year for Stoops to take a move is probably after next season. I think Kentucky is going to have a really good football team next season. I've always thought this season was kind of a bridge year into next year, because I think next year they're going to have that defense ready to rock and roll. A senior Terry Wilson, you lose Lynn Bolden, but you return most of your offensive line. Your offense is going to have a ton of juniors and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
I think next year is the year to get to, and which is why these last five games – back in the preseason, we always were going to determine, was this season a success? Was it not a success with what Kentucky does in the last five games?
Beat Tennessee and Louisville.
Take care of Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Can you beat Missouri in what game you're probably going to be an underdog in?
Yeah, that's a big – which, by the way, Missouri's been a double-digit favorite in every game except South Carolina, and they were 9-point favorites.
Right.
Pretty crazy.
Right. They played a weird schedule.
Very weird.
So can you finish strong? Now, the variables have changed because Terry's out. The offense has had some really bad moments. The defense, you know, has gone through some young growing pains like we thought. And a lot of the games have been ugly. And now you've got a quarterback playing – a receiver playing quarterback. So a lot has changed. But still, what happens in these last five games are going to determine whether the season is a success or not. When you look at the schedule, you know, you're facing – you're a double-digit dog in Missouri, which is something you probably didn't see coming in. But still, I think you match up well. You're going to have a chance to win. The Tennessee game is going to be a toss-up. Tennessee's probably going to be favorite, but it's going to be like about 1 or 2 points. Vanderbilt, you're going to be around a touchdown favorite on the road. Louisville, you're going to be favorite when they come in, as of right now. So the chance is still there to finish strong. And I think the storyline around the season can change if Kentucky does finish strong. I think the opportunity is there.
You went out, you're 8-4.
Right.
And that's with Lynn Bowden at quarterback for most of the season. Maybe, pretty wild.
You know, just you drop one, you're 7-5. And you
exactly.
Take care of business. So there's a really good chance to end the season strong.
And that would be very uncommon towards the early parts of the Stoops tenure, where it was win 5 games and then try to get one, and you just couldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
which it's
in those schedules, the wins were at the beginning.
Right.
This year, the wins are at the end.
Which I do want to bring up that point, because one of those brutal ones was that Vanderbilt game in 15, and it was the game after Georgia. And I don't know if it – even though Kentucky, this margin of victory wasn't even near the closest for Georgia in the Stoops tenure. That one obviously came 3 years ago when they lost by a field goal. It doesn't feel like this is going to be some sort of like I think there's – instead of being emotionally let down because you let one slip away, I think there's some like, hey, we played with them kind of vibes.
That's what you got from the team this week when media sessions.
Especially with the offensive line, which is good to hear. Especially when you're thinking that they're going to be able to run the ball against this Missouri team. So I'm feeling good, Luckett. You feeling good?
I do. I think Kentucky's got a really, really good chance in this game. I think they're going to need the turnover breaks to be able to win.
It'd be nice to have our rowdy contingent right there. I know it's not going to be packed because of the weather.
It could, but in the rain like that, sometimes those are the rowdiest crowds.
It gets loopy, man. That Mississippi State game last year was wild. Now, it's going to be a little bit colder. It's going to be in the upper 50s, lower 60s, but still, it can get nice and loopy.
But I like Kentucky's chances. And how about our guy Joe Moorhead and Derek Mason this week? Joe Moorhead got put in the heater by Paul Feinbaum.
Oh, man.
And his AD did too.
Pretty, oh, yeah, John Cohen.
Body language saying, yeah, I'm getting the hell out of this dump.
And Derek Mason.
And Derek Mason
pretty
much. I'm
built for this job.
And he did it again again at the teleconference. He's pretty much, what he's telling me is like, hey, coaching community, this job freaking sucks. You do not want this job.
Don't float your name out there.
But while I'm here, I'm gonna do the best job anyone can in this. And I respect that.
And you know what, though? He ain't wrong.
No. And you have to wonder, I'm just sitting there wondering, like the Vandy front office or whatever you want to call it, has to be like, God damn, what is he doing? He's making this sound so bad. If their plan is to truly fire him, and he's just saying how much this job sucks.
Oh,
I respect the hustle, my man.
You got to. But we got to get out of here. We appreciate you all listening. We appreciate you all subscribing. We appreciate Vacation Experts for letting us talk at their office. And we'll appreciate seeing you Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun. And also, thanks for all the people who came up. I meant to do this last week, but for all the folks who came up at the last pregame show before the Arkansas game and said, hey, that 11 personnel is awesome, man. We appreciate what y'all do. That doesn't fall on deaf ears.
Thank you. It's
yes,
awesome.
And this is a very thankless job, too. It's a cool job, very, very thankless. So when you get that kind of response, it's really incredible. So good job to you, Luckett. That's a lot of it's on you. So yeah, pat yourself on the shoulder. And you, listener.
Hey, you're the engine that drives the truck.
Raise your hand, pat yourself on the shoulder, and then get that thumb and smash that subscribe button, rate and review. Thank you much. We'll see y'all Saturday at the Kroger Field. Go Cats. Go Kroger.